Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome once again. I think there's probably no topic other than the weather, that is on the people's tongues and minds and thoughts than the debt and the deficit and the battle going on seemingly between Republicans and Democrats, clearly between the Republican-led House and the White House, but also both the Democratic side in the Senate and the Republican side in the House came out with their plans. The talks at the White House seem to have fallen apart. So we are talking to two people here today about what this all means, where we think it's going to go, where they think it should go, and what parts may be missing that the major press is not even focusing on. We're joined once again by Robert Creamer. And Bob Creamer is partner at Democracy Partners. He's a political organizer and strategist, and his most recent book is Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. Bob, good to have you back.
Good to be with you.
And Charles Lawler, right?
Yes, sir, Lawler.
Lawler, sorry, Charles. Charles Lawler, who is the Maryland State Director of Americans for Prosperity. And Charles, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here, Mark. Thank you.
So let's talk about what's going on here. This clearly is a very critical topic for the United States of America. And one of the things I wrote the other day in a piece was that one of the things that Speaker Bonner said that made more sense than anything else I've ever read was that the reason these talks fell apart at the White House over the weekend was because we have a different set of values about where America should be going. Now, I just would like to hear both your thoughts on that. Charles and then Bob.
I tell you, I agree. I agree with the speaker in so many cases, and let me kind of explain why. There are two very real differences distinguished in terms of where people believe America should be going. There are some who believe that, but I think there is a general consensus that we all agree we want to do the right thing, but how the right thing is defined and determined is where we differ. There's a group of Americans that want to see a balanced budget. They want to see our fiscal house in order. They believe that the strength of our nation, this Jeffersonian democracy that we have, stands strong only when we have a secure economy. On the other side, there's a much more compassionate view and viewpoint that says, hey, we got to take care of as many folks as we can. And although a balanced budget is important, it seems to be more important for us to make sure that we can meet some immediate needs. And sometimes when we look to meet immediate needs, if we don't take the long-term approach and see things from a long-term perspective and we're a bit too short-sighted, it can really cost us our long-term foundation. And those two very different and distinct views of our country, I think, are where the congressional as well as the executive branch continue to not find the middle ground. We have to realize that our economy's got to be balanced. If our economy is not balanced, it doesn't matter how passionate or how compassionate we are. If you can't pay the bills, then there's nothing you can do in terms of helping other people.
Bob Creamer?
Yeah, well, I do agree that there are two very distinct set of values, set of views or visions for America. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the fundamental problem we've had in America for the last decade is that we've had stagnant growth on the part of average people's incomes. All of the income growth has gone to the top 2% of the population. And in that context, you can't expect to see economic demand continue. That is, the middle class has less and less percentage of total buying power in the economy to buy products that are produced by increased productivity. And as a consequence, the economy is stagnated and will continue to stagnate if we don't allow wide sharing of the products of our economy's growth. Let me just add, by the way, this fixation on deficit is, this is not a mystery how to solve the problem of the deficit. Bill Clinton had a surplus as far as the eye could see. And as soon as George Bush took over, we had a situation where he lowered taxes for the top percentage of the population, by and large. That led to substantial deficits, then started two wars that were not paid for by anything, then it had a prescription drug plan that was not paid for by any offset. And as a consequence of that, we saw big deficits. It's not a mystery how this happened. And we also know how we can get out of it. I mean, we have to ask the richest people, the people who benefited most from our society, to pay a decent share of income. If the top tax rate in the United States was 50% under Ronald Reagan, Now it's there are people who run hedge funds who pay less than their secretaries, 15% of their income. That's outrageous. The rich have stopped paying taxes by and large, or at least substantially, and that's one of the reasons why we have deficit problems and we have to solve them.
And Charles, let me ask you this. I mean, if picking up what Bob Cremer just said, the whole idea, and I'm just curious from as a conservative thinker, the whole idea that the top 1%, richest 1%, income has tripled in the share of America's income over the past 30 years, and that you know that some people argue that I mean that's just kind of outrageous because it hasn't come back at all to kind of develop the U.S. economy. Is that something that goes beyond right, left, liberal, conservative in thinking about where we might get income from America, or is there you have a different idea?
You know what? I have a completely different idea, and I want to start out by saying that to some respect, Bob's comments are in the ballpark, but they miss the mark in so many ways. And this is really what's so frustrating me about this debate. Let's take the first part, the 1% wealthiest American continue to get wealthy. I want to make sure that the point is clear that the top 5% of the wealthiest folks in the nation pay over 60% of America's taxes, which means the revenue, the lion's share of the revenue that's generated in this country is generated by the top 5% wealthiest in the nation. So to penalize the wealthiest Americans who pay the lion's share of the taxes in this country is not fiscally responsible. In addition, Robert Mitchell, under the Clinton administration, which he is correct, but what we fail to recognize is the fact that the Clinton administration, there was a Republican Congress headed by Newt Gingrich, the Speaker at the time, who passed a balanced budget. And after passing the balanced budget, we saw one of the greatest surpluses our nation has ever seen. So I believe that most of your listeners, Mark, realize that it's the Congress that passes the budget, not the President. So to give President Clinton the credit for a balanced budget or even for the surplus is a bit immature, to say the least. I would say uninformed, because it was under Clinton's administration that we had a Republican conservative Congress that brought about the largest surplus that our country's ever seen. And under the Bush administration, we had a Democratic Congress that brought forth one of the greatest deficits that our nation's absorbed right up into the Obama administration, where until recently there was a Democrat Congress. So I at least want to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples and we're being accurate and not misleading with our information.
Bob, what do you say to that?
Well, let's be accurate. I mean, it was the Democratic Congress that passed in the early part of the Clinton administration that passed an increase in taxes on the wealthy that led to the balanced budgets of the balance of the decade. One of the reasons it became a Republican Congress was that the Republicans campaigned against those increases that were so critical to assure that. Number two, let's be clear that the percentage we're talking about of income of taxes are income taxes only. I mean, that doesn't count payroll taxes, which are paid by middle-class people in much disproportionate form, and sales taxes and property taxes and all the many taxes that people pay, that middle-class people pay. In general, as Warren Buffett made clear, you know, he pays a lower percentage of his income in taxes than his secretary. And that is generally true throughout the population as a percentage of people's incomes. It is definitely true that a lot of the income goes to the top tiny percent of the population. A guy like John Paulson makes $5 billion last year. That's an extraordinary amount of money. Top CEO in the United States last year made $42,000 an hour. That means in the first 15 minutes of his first day of the year, he made as much as his minimum wage workers made all year long. Now, that no wonder they're paying higher taxes, but that's an outrageous inequality of income. And that's helped lead to the stagnation, because it's stagnated middle-class wages, incomes, that has led to the job deficit, which is the real deficit we should be talking about. We have a huge jobs deficit, and the only way to increase jobs right now in this kind of context is to increase the number of customers with money in their pocket. And that's what government can do if it does it properly in a large enough quantity. We found that after the New Deal. We found that in World War II. We found that in the early part of this second half of last century. Keynesianism works. And the notion that we can spend less and have more jobs is just ridiculous. We spend less at this moment in a recession. We will have less jobs and a less vital economy. And sometimes I wonder if the Republicans are not interested in that because they want to sink Obama more than anything else.
Huh. So let me posit this. I'm going to come back to the point that you just made, Bob Creamer, and that you were critiquing a moment again, Charles Lawler, and the talk about what maybe this discussion does or does not answer is taking place in Congress. But if you look at the deal that I was looking at, that just to talk about the politics of this for a moment, if you look at the deal that Obama was offering as of July 18th and Bonner was offering in return in their meetings, the distance was not that great. The distance there's even less distance between what Speaker Bonner and Majority Leader Reid are positing for the public. Much little difference. I mean, and I think that this, so we're playing, but neither one of them now are talking about, now that the Obama plan seems to be completely out of the picture, any increases in taxes. So where do you think this takes us? Where do you think this takes America? What do you think we're going to hear in the next couple of days? And I'm going to go back to some more substantive stuff, but I'm just curious what you both think about that. Charles and then Bob.
Well, here's what I think is going to happen. Yes, they're close, but the point that the president, that our president has to move on is he has to agree that dollar for dollar, whatever this debt is increased, we decrease spending by that exact same amount. The bottom line, Mark, is this. If we don't have the money, it doesn't make sense to borrow more. If we don't have a plan in place to reduce our deficit and reduce our spending, any family raising children or any family without children or any single person, really, that level-minded single person that has their own personal economy, their own bills that they have to pay, they understand the tragedy in increasing your credit limit if you cannot pay the interest and you cannot pay the debt that you currently have. I think that what's going to happen over the next few days is that there's going to be an agreement, and our president is going to see the reality that we have to find it. It's going to take work to do it, but we have to find where to cut to make sure the dollar for dollar debt increase is met with a debt decrease in terms of finding the expenses and where to cut them. I think that's going to happen. I think that both sides are listening to the majority of Americans, not Democrat Americans, not Republican Americans, not independent Americans, but the majority of Americans that realize our spending is out of control and we don't want this debt limit, this debt ceiling increased. But if it has to be increased, show us that you can make a mature and responsible decision with the people's money to find the savings and cut the spending.
Bob?
Sure. I think the reason why Boehner walked away was he couldn't sell any deal that involved any kind of revenue to his caucus. I mean, the issue is not whether we're going to balance the budget. There are many plans to balance the budget. My wife, Congressman Jan Schakowsky, was on the Fiscal Commission for the President. The Fiscal Commission has a plan of her own that balances the budget. That's not the issue. The President has a plan to balance the budget. The question is how. And the how, from the Democratic point of view, we want to increase revenues from people who have a lot more money. Before we ask someone's on Social Security making $14,000 a year to sacrifice some of their benefits, or we ask people on Medicare to have to pay another $6,000 a year out of pocket, which is what the Ryan proposal did, we'd like to ask the hedge fund operators, these guys who gamble for a living on Wall Street, to pay a little bit more out of their massive incomes. And in fact, the same kind of rates they were under Ronald Reagan. That's not too much to ask. And I think that's considered fair by most Americans. That's the issue. The single issue that's holding up of an agreement. Please, Dad, by the way, what will happen if there is a debt a default here is not entirely clear. I mean, this is a man-made, a human-made default. This is not a financial default.
What do you mean
right
by
now,
that?
The markets pay the lowest rate in interest they paid virtually ever for bonds right now, because it's considered the safest investment in the world. They may very well go for a while thinking that it's going to be safe. The real question is this: if we can't borrow anymore, then the money that has previously been authorized by the Congress is to spend, we're not going to be able to spend that money, and as a consequence, the people who we owe money to are going to have to involuntarily loan it to the government. Those are Social Security recipients, veterans, people with disabilities, small cities and towns. They're companies that the government owes money to. They're hospitals. They're the ones who are going to start financing the federal authorization, the federal debt, instead of people who are, you know, being paid interest. And they'll do it for interest-free. In other words, I think what we're going to see here in the next week, when people realize that Social Security checks are only 40% likely to go out, where there's a lottery for who gets paid, what's owed, I think there'll be a real insurrection vis-a-vis the Congress, since this is a man-made crisis. It has nothing to do with the financial situation in the United States.
Now I wonder, Charles Lauder, if you disagree with the substantial nature of what Bob Cramer just said about this being a man-made creature, and we're kind of playing, in some senses, a show game with the American people.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm trying to maintain the best professional posture possible, because I've heard this rhetoric so many times, and I don't want to disrespect the gentleman, because his points have value. But here's the brass tacks. Is it a man-made problem? It absolutely is. And it goes back beyond this current administration. It goes back to elected official after elected official, Congress after Congress, president after president, making bad decisions when it comes to our debt. But it has come to a head now. We've managed to put ourselves in a position where we're going to have to do something now. And it's not time to take partisan sides, Mark. It's not time to say, why aren't the Republicans who are going after Social Security? That is so far from the truth. It is not about attacking. It is not about attacking our spirit, freedom-loving Americans that are on Social Security, or trying to make the wealthiest 1% pay more out of their paycheck. We just want to balance the budget. That's what America needs. And Rob talked about the president's plan to balance the budget. I don't know what planet he comes from, but I haven't seen it. No one's seen it. In fact, the only reason there's a discussion or a debate about cutting expenses is because the people made it a point in the last 2010 election to send a message. And the message was very clear. And it was so clear that our president had to change his strategy. He had to talk about cutting expenses. He wasn't talking about cutting expenses the first 2 years of administration. It was all about passing the biggest health care debacle that our country's ever seen, and taking us even further in debt. So all of a sudden, Bob wants to talk about a balanced budget that the president and the Democrat Congress has had. I mean, he must believe that your listeners either just woke up yesterday or were born last night. The bottom line is this simple. It's not a Democrat problem. It's not a Republican problem. It's an American problem. We have got to balance the budget. And if we're going to ask for more credit, if we're going to increase the debt ceiling, we absolutely have to cut expenses by the same amount that we're willing to raise it, so we can show we have some type of fiscal responsibility.
Now, Bob, I think that, and especially in the sentence of Charles Lauder, is the rub and the break.
Well, I mean, look, first off, I mean, talk about political amnesia. I mean, President Bush inherited a surplus as far as the eye could see, and then made proposals to the Congress, which were enacted, that caused this surplus, this huge deficit. And that deficit, but you didn't hear any Republicans talking about deficits during the Bush administration. It was only when Obama was elected and had to recover us from the greatest economic crisis since the Great Depression that you heard word one from Republicans about deficits. In fact, Dick Cheney said deficits don't matter. You didn't hear anything about it then. I mean, the concern for deficits is suddenly an attempt to shrink government when Obama's in charge. And, you know, that's it has been absolutely necessary to do more spending to generate more jobs. Jobs are the name of the game in the American economy. That's what people really care about. They care about their job, their Medicare, their Social Security. They don't care about abstract questions. And it is no question at all that that the president has proposed a process to reduce the deficit. He proposed a big deal. Boehner walked away from it because it had revenue in it from rich people and from big corporations and from millionaires and billionaires and guys who fly around in corporate jets getting tax breaks while our friends on the other side are looking to try and abolish Medicare, which they proposed in the Ryan plan. I just don't understand what adds up for normal people. Let me just add one other thing. Harry Reid has now made a proposal that meets the condition in question. $2.7 trillion in cuts in spending over the next decade, no revenue in his proposal, increase the debt ceiling. And the Republicans are saying, well, now that doesn't work. I don't quite understand why, but if they're serious, they'll take the Harry Reid proposal, and we'll be done with this.
Mark, if I could, just real quickly.
Please do.
When President Bush inherited the surplus, it was a surplus that was provided for President Bush. Again, I have to repeat this just for Bob's clarity and for his own sanity purposes. It was created under a Republican Congress. That's number one. Number two.
It was created by action of a Democratic Congress.
Number two. I understand you're frustrated, sir. Just give me one second. Number two. When President Bush walked into office, it wasn't more than 6 months to a year that our country was attacked for the first time in our country's history. Now, I'm a United States Marine officer currently deployed in the Middle East. I go back and forth from the Middle East to here and at Central Command in Tampa, Florida, to Washington, D.C., at the Pentagon. And I want to tell you that our nation has never been attacked on its own personal ground like this before in our lifetime. We had to react, and we had to react quickly. We lost almost 5,000 American citizens that fateful day, with more to follow. We are trying to maintain and build and reestablish the stability of our country. And our men and women in uniform, we owe a great debt of gratitude. And I'm not just saying that because I am one, because of how they had to react to stabilize our nation, to re-strengthen our nation, so the world doesn't believe that we are suspect to rogue terrorist knuckleheads that decide they want to use their free will to spew their violence on our soil. The deficit that we face now, yes, it does come as a result of wars that we're fighting and that we're still engaged in. That is absolutely true. But to think for a second that it came as a result of negligence on behalf of the Bush administration or even a Congress, Republican or Democrat for that time, I think it's a bit misleading, Rob, to be honest with you. Finally, you cannot increase jobs through the federal government. It is not the government's job to create jobs. It's private sector's job to create jobs. If you read the Constitution, I don't want to insult Rob's intelligence because I'm sure he's a smart man. Whether he's displaying that now or not, I'm unsure. But according to the Constitution, it is not the government's job to create jobs. It's the government's job to make sure the atmosphere and our country is set so job creation can happen by free-willed, independent, freedom-loving-minded Americans. And you should not penalize Americans from starting jobs, taking a risk, and being successful by taxing them out of their income. We have to support businesses so that businesses can create jobs. And if you decrease the size of government, you will increase the private sector, and if you give people their money back, they will spend it more.
Bob, I really...
You know, that philosophy was the philosophy of the Bush administration. It said, we're going to create a lot of jobs if we cut taxes for the wealthy. They cut taxes for the wealthy. They tried their great experiment, and they created not one net private sector job during the entire period of their administration. Not one. It was a total failure that led to the biggest economic collapse, that and their deregulation of Wall Street, the biggest economic collapse since the Great Depression, and cost 8 million Americans their jobs. I mean, this is a fantasy land that somehow, if government just gets off everybody's back, and if there's deregulation of all these guys on Wall Street, And if there's tax breaks for the wealthiest, I mean, it's akin to these folks who used to live in these early cultures that thought if they offended the angry gods, they would quit sending the rain and the sun to grow their crops. I mean, giving the rich everything they want doesn't yield jobs. There's $2 trillion of cash that corporate America is sitting on right now, not because they're bad people. There's not any demand in the economy. And the demand in the economy was collapsed through the financial catastrophe that occurred under the Bush administration. And as to wars, I mean, you bet men and women in uniform paid a price. And part of that price was a result of a totally unnecessary war in Iraq that soaked up $2 trillion of American dollars for not one benefit when it came to the war on the people who had attacked the United States. Let's remember, it was Barack Obama who finally brought Osama bin Laden to justice.
So let me continue this conversation, by the way, folks. We are going to take a very brief break here and come right back with Robert Creamer, who you just heard, partner at Democracy Partners and political organizer and strategist, author of his most recent book, Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. Charles Lawler is Maryland State Director for Americans for Prosperity. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Welcome back. I'm here with Bob Creamer, who is partner at Democracy Partners, political organizer and strategist, and his most recent book is Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. Charles Lawler is the Maryland State Director of Americans for Prosperity, and I'm Mark Steiner. So let me ask you both this question, though, I mean, about the deficit. People hear this deficit number, and I think that's part of a couple of really important things here to clarify from both your perspectives. When you hear $14.3 trillion for a debt ceiling, that's a massive number for people to comprehend. And as most polls have shown, most Americans don't even know how to wrap their hands around or minds around that number. But what does it mean for the both of you that number in this huge country that we live in is 90% of the U.S. gross domestic product? And how does that fit into your notion of an economy of the future of America, and what does that mean? I mean, if you look at post-World War II, as an article I was reading about the other day said, the debt-to-GDP ratio was over 110%. And the article went on to say that the United Kingdom had a debt-to-GDP ratio 100% for almost the entire 19th century when they were building the most vast imperialist power on the planet Earth, at least at that time. And so I'm wondering these are things we don't talk about. I mean, does that mean deficit then is a bad thing, a good thing, a necessary thing, you can't live without it, or there's something we're missing? Charles, then Bob.
I think that when I hear that number, $14.3 trillion, it just reminds me just how far south our economy has gone. It also reminds me of how large our government has become. I'll say it this way, much, much larger than our founding fathers ever suspected that we get to this point. But it also lights a fire for me and many other Americans that we need to do something now, that the time for hesitation and the time to slow down our aggressive efforts of balancing this budget is now. We've got to get it done. And that fire has got to be lit and it's got to be maintained. The gross size of our government is just out of control. It's just far too large. It also lets me know, and this is a very important fact, that that's less freedom by and large that our American citizens have, because much more of their money is going to taxation than they ever thought or ever dreamed of. For example, 38 to 40 cents of every dollar that's made by an American goes to pay taxes, which means we only live off of 60% of our revenue, and that's before we even go buy groceries, buy a car, or buy our sweetie a dress, or our husband a tie. So we're taxed enough already. The whole Tea Party movement has come as a result of this number, $14.3 trillion, and the out-of-control spending that our current federal government has.
Bob?
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is all a myth. I mean, the The thing that is definitely true is that average Americans have had income stagnate over the last decade and a half. Definitely that's the case. It's not because we don't have increases in growth of the gross domestic product. Our overall economy has actually grown. It's not broke. It's just that it's all been siphoned off to the wealthiest people in America. There's the percentage we pay in taxes today is lower than it has at any time since World War II. I mean, the percentage we pay in taxes as an economy today as a whole, that's just a fact, is lower than any of the other major industrial countries in the world. Now, that's not to say that average people don't pay a fair amount, because the wealthiest people in America pay a much lower percentage of their income in taxes today than they have forever since the last Depression. The size of the GDP, the government vis-a-vis the gross domestic product, has maintained about the same level for the last 40 years. It varies a little bit depending on what the current growth size of the GDP is. So that, for instance, the GDP shrank around the Great Recession in the last 2 years, so the percentage of government spending went up, and as it should have if we were going to stimulate the economy and prevent a Great Depression, which is exactly what Obama tried to do. Not enough, unfortunately, largely because the Republicans tried to prevent that. It's simply a myth that the size of government has grown a lot and is the principal problem. The principal problem is we don't have enough jobs in the economy. That's the big waste. The debt-to-GDP ratio is high, but not super high in the middle of still the end of a recession. It's got to be controlled over the long haul. If you try and shrink it today, you will simply cost jobs. Every economist in America virtually says that. So this kind of know-nothing, oh, the government's so big and that's the problem, is too much tax, is just flat-out incorrect and based on fallacy.
Charles?
I'm doing the best I can to hold on, Mark. I'll be honest with you. And I would be interested, because I do believe in respecting people's views. I would love to see these stats that Bob has. I'd love to see them and read them, because the research I've seen shows me the very contrary, that not only is government spending out of control, but we just paid out one of the largest stimulus packages to governments and to people, more than we ever had in our nation's history. We gave failing companies money to bail their own companies out of debt. And to think for a second that we can give those type of stimulus dollars and the untold billions away and still believe that the federal government is not bigger than it should be, I fail to see where Bob's figures are coming from. It's almost embarrassing to have the conversation. So I'll push it this way and say this. If we don't get control of our spending, if we don't allow the private sector to start creating jobs, we're going to lose this Jeffersonian democracy that we have. Here's what I challenge your listeners, as well as Bob. Read the Constitution. Not that I'm trying to insult anyone's intelligence, but read the document the Founding Fathers wrote. You'll see that it is not the government's job to create jobs. It's not the government's job to have any say in the private sector whatsoever. If you can show me that in the Constitution, I will humbly submit. Even to Bob right now and concede anything he's saying. But the truth of the matter is, since I do have a constitution right here in front of me, and I am looking at the 10th Amendment, it is government's responsibility to return to state, local governments, and to common people every power that is not presented and given to it as written in the first three articles of the Constitution, which means none of this conversation about growth in business, growth in jobs, is the business of the federal government. So I hope that Bob is an American. I hope that he reads the Constitution, because if he does, he'll see that anything that he's saying that has anything remotely to do with the government creating jobs is unconstitutional.
Well, that Bob,
you know, this notion that government is the problem or government is a bad thing.
Where
has
is
been
it
promoted here,
Bob?
By the,
where is
promoted,
it in the Constitution?
One at a time. Go ahead, Bob.
This notion that government's a bad thing has been promoted for many years by the right wing is just, you know, wrong. I mean, the government is the name we call for the things we choose to do together. And And the notion that unfettered, an unfettered corporate sector always knows best, you know, that's what led to the Great Depression. That's what led, in the case of Wall Street, to the Great Recession, caused millions and millions of jobs. Yes, I think it is absolutely the responsibility of the leadership of America to make it a prosperous country. You betcha, and I'll bet 80, 90% of Americans agree with me. And if you want to argue that it is not the responsibility of America's leaders to make it a prosperous nation, then you know, go right ahead, be my guest. But I think it is, that would be completely rejected by average Americans. Of course it is their responsibility. Now, you might argue that the way to do that is by just freeing up everybody from regulation and any kind of oversight or accountability and cutting taxes for wealthy people. We tried that during the 2000s, and it failed.
One of the things, a conversation I had yesterday on the air was with a economic thinker who you both may agree or disagree with. His name is David Corton. And one of the things he posited on this program was that we're talking about bailouts. He said that the Federal Reserve bailed out Wall Street and without any kind of oversight or regulations for close to $13 trillion since in a report that was released in late last year by the Federal Reserve. $13 trillion. Not a similar kind of thing going to Americans, even though the money was trillions were devoted to other programs. They're over a long period of 5 to 10 years. This is like over a few months. And his argument is that this whole deficit argument is the wrong argument, that we have phantom wealth and real wealth in America. And one of the things he said that should be done is you have to harness and change the way the Federal Reserve uses its money and force the creation to the Federal Reserve's money creation powers to finance investment in public goods rather than fueling the financial bubbles of Wall Street, which is his argument yesterday, and that to instead do as they do in North Dakota, which is fueled into helping create state banks and helping to create smaller state private banks around the country that are tied to the community, that develop a community and develop jobs and don't just put the money into Wall Street. Now, that's a plan that I think that has elements to me of left and right, conservative and liberal, progressive and libertarian in some senses. And I'm curious what you think of that. I mean, he's arguing that we are arguing the wrong thing here, Bob Cremer, that there's another way to think about how we should approach the issue of money in America.
Well, I think it's very interesting. I will say this. I mean, one thing we may agree on is I think the idea of bailing out those banks, those big banks, without forcing them to be broken up, without forcing the owners to divest themselves of their interests by allowing those guys to continue to take bonuses, was outrageous. And the Wall Street Accountability Bill that was passed last year, I think, will improve the situation going forward. I should note that the Republicans in the Congress opposed it, but that will make some progress going forward in terms of controlling Wall Street. But I'm a believer that the power of the Wall Street banks is one of our biggest problems. There is no economic reason to have such huge economic institutions. These are international institutions. They're not American banks. They're international banks. And I say banks, financial institutions. We can't allow them to simply have a huge casino there. And then with the view that if they all lose, then we end up, the taxpayers end up picking up the tab. That's what happened last time.
And before we have to round this out, one more quick question. I'd like you to comment on that too, Charles, and I'll let you both go.
Well, I agree with Bob. I think it's a good place to for this intermission because I think we shouldn't have bailed them out. I was of the utmost disappointed with President Bush, who came up with the idea of bailing them out, and it must be noted that that's actually when the Tea Party rally started, during the Bush administration, toward the end of his administration, when he came up with this ridiculous idea of bailing out Wall Street. I had hoped that President Obama would come in and stop that. Instead, he passed a second stimulus to bail them out even further. We have to let the market penalize businesses and companies that make stupid financial decisions. And instead, we reward them by giving them low-interest loans and give them time to pay back America's money without asking the taxpayer if we wanted to bail these companies out and Wall Street out to begin with. I do agree with the gentleman that the debate of phantom dollars versus real dollars has got to be one we have to have and focus on what these real dollars are and change the mission of the Federal Reserve altogether. I wouldn't mind deregulating the Federal Reserve. I don't see it as a place in, or should have a place in federal government and free markets. But so in that regard, I agree, and I do agree with Bob that we should have never allowed for taxpayers' dollars to bail out Wall Street.
No, I think you both probably...
Well, let me be clear. I'm not arguing there shouldn't have been a stabilization of the market. I'm just arguing that there should have been a price to pay for the to eliminate this horrific moral hazard that occurred when the owners of those banks ended up making off just fine in the end, and all those speculators and the bonus guys. I think it's there's a major role to stabilize financial markets. Otherwise, you'd have a financial collapse. I also, by the way, the stimulus was not a bailout. The stimulus was money being spent in the economy to generate demand so that people would actually create jobs. And I think there's no doubt that without the stimulus bill that was passed by the last by the Obama administration, there would have been another Great Depression.
I disagree.
And one final thing from just very quick. So both of you think that this week we'll see Democrats, the Congress coming together with a plan, but I sense that one or the other, or both of you, think that plan may raise the debt ceiling, but it's not going to answer our long-term questions. Do you both agree or disagree with that very quickly, Charles and Bob, and then we'll roll?
I agree. Yeah, I agree that the debt ceiling will be raised, but I believe it will be raised dollar for dollar expenses that will be cut so that we can show, as the leaders of this nation, that we are not morally bankrupt, that we do understand the importance of a balanced budget, and we have to take our consequences in order to ensure that what we do in terms of raising the debt ceiling, at the same time, we're lowering what we spend.
Bob Cramer? Cramer?
I hope the debt ceiling will be raised so we avoid a man-made default, and time will tell here in the next week.
Bob Cramer is partner at Democracy Partners. His book, most recently, is Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. Charles Lawler is Maryland State Director of Americans for Prosperity, and Bob and Charles have been a really lively and interesting discussion. I invite you both to come back, and thank you both so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
It's been my pleasure. I look forward to coming back.
Thank you. Thank Bob and Charles. Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com. Welcome back. I'm here with Bob Cramer, who is partner at Democracy Partners, political organizer and strategist, and his most recent book is Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. Charles Lawler is the Maryland State Director of Americans for Prosperity, and I'm Mark Steiner. So let me ask you both this question, though. I mean, about the deficit. People hear this deficit number, and I think that's part of a couple of really important things here to clarify from both your perspectives. When you hear $14.3 trillion for a debt ceiling, that's a massive number for people to comprehend. And as most polls have shown, most Americans don't even know how to wrap their hands around or minds around that number. What does it mean for the both of you that number in this huge country that we live in is 90% of the U.S. gross domestic product? And how does that fit into your notion of an economy of the future of America, and what does that mean? I mean, if you look at post-World War II, as an article I was reading about the other day said, the debt-to-GDP ratio was over 110%. And the article went on to say that the United Kingdom had a debt-to-GDP ratio 100% for almost the entire 19th century when they were building the most vast imperialist power on the planet Earth, at least at that time. And so I'm wondering, these are things we don't talk about. I mean, does that mean deficit then is a bad thing, a good thing, a necessary thing, you can't live without it, or there's something we're missing? Charles, then Bob.
I think that when I hear that number, 14.3 trillion, it just reminds me just how far south our economy has gone it also reminds me of how large our government has become. I'll say it this way, much, much larger than our founding fathers ever suspected that we get to this point. But it also lights a fire for me and many other Americans that we need to do something now, that the time for hesitation and the time to slow down our aggressive efforts of balancing this budget is now. We've got to get it done, and that fire's got to be lit and it's got to be maintained. The gross size of our government is just out of control. It's just far too large. It also lets me know, and this is a very important fact, that that's less freedom by and large that our American citizens have, because much more of their money is going to taxation than they ever thought or ever dreamed of. For example, 38 to 40 cents of every dollar that's made by an American goes to pay taxes, which means we only live off of 60% of our revenue, and that's before we even go buy groceries, buy a car, or buy our sweetie a dress, or our husband a tie. So we're taxed enough already. The whole Tea Party movement has come as a result of this number, $14.3 trillion, and the out-of-control spending that our current federal government has.
Bob?
This is all a myth. I mean, the thing that is definitely true is that average Americans have had income stagnate over the last decade and a half. Definitely, that's the case. It's not because we don't have increases in growth of the gross domestic product. Our overall economy has actually grown. It's not broke. It's just that it's all been siphoned off to the wealthiest people in America. There's the percentage we pay in taxes today is lower than it has at any time since World War II. I mean, the percentage we pay in taxes as an economy today, as a whole, that's just a fact. Is lower than any of the other major industrial countries in the world. Now, that's not to say that average people don't pay a fair amount, because the wealthiest people in America pay a much lower percentage of their income in taxes today than they have forever since the last Depression. The size of the GDP, the government vis-a-vis the gross domestic product, has maintained about the same level for the last 40 years. It varies a little bit depending on what the current growth size of the GDP is. So that, for instance, the GDP shrank around the Great Recession in the last 2 years, so the percentage of government spending went up, and as it should have if we were going to stimulate the economy and prevent a Great Depression, which is exactly what Obama tried to do. Not enough, unfortunately, largely because the Republicans tried to prevent that. It's simply a myth that the size of government has grown a lot and is the principal problem. The principal problem is we don't have enough jobs in the economy. That's the big waste. The debt to GDP ratio is high, but not super high in the middle of the end of a recession. It's got to be controlled over the long haul. If you try and shrink it today, you will simply cost jobs. Every economist in America virtually says that. So this kind of know-nothing, oh, the government's so big and that's the problem, is too much tax. It's just flat out incorrect and based on fallacy.
Charles,
I'm doing the best I can to hold on, Mark. I'll be honest with you, and I would be interested, because I do believe in respecting people's views. I would love to see these stats that Bob has. I'd love to see them and read them, because the research I've seen shows me the very contrary. That not only is government spending out of control, but we just paid out one of the largest stimulus packages to governments and to people, more than we ever had in our nation's history. We gave failing companies money to bail their own companies out of debt. And to think for a second that we can give those type of stimulus dollars and the untold billions away and still believe that the federal government is not bigger than it should be, I fail to see where Bob's figures are coming from. It's almost embarrassing to have the conversation. So I'll push it this way and say this. If we don't get control of our spending, if we don't allow the private sector to start creating jobs, we're going to lose this Jeffersonian democracy that we have. Here's what I challenge your listeners, as well as Bob. Read the Constitution. Not that I'm trying to insult anyone's intelligence, but document the founding fathers wrote, you'll see that it is not the government's job to create jobs. It's not the government's job to have any say in the private sector whatsoever. If you can show me that in the Constitution, I will humbly submit, even to Bob right now, and concede anything he's saying. But the truth of the matter is, since I do have a Constitution right here in front of me, and I am looking at the 10th Amendment, it is government's responsibility to return to state, local governments, and to common people every power that is not presented and given to it as written in the first three articles of the Constitution, which means none of this conversation about growth in business, growth in jobs, is the business of the federal government. So I hope that Bob is an American. I hope that he reads the Constitution, because if he does, he'll see that everything that he's, anything that he's saying that has anything remotely to do with the government creating jobs is unconstitutional.
Well, that Bob,
you know, this notion that government is the problem or government is a bad thing.
Where
has been promoted here,
Bob? Where is it in the Constitution?
Wait. One at a time. Go ahead, Bob.
This notion that government's a bad thing has been promoted for many years by the right wing. Is just, you know, wrong. I mean, the government is the name we call for the things we choose to do together. And the notion that an unfettered corporate sector always knows best, you know, that's what led to the Great Depression. That's what led, in the case of Wall Street, to the Great Recession, caused millions and millions of jobs. Yes, I think it is absolutely the responsibility of the leadership of America to make it a prosperous country. You betcha, and I'll bet 80, 90% of Americans agree with me. And if you want to argue that it is not the responsibility of America's leaders to make it a prosperous nation, then you know, go right ahead, be my guest. But I think it is. That would be completely rejected by average Americans. Of course it is their responsibility. Now, you might argue that the way to do that is by just freeing up everybody from regulation and any kind of oversight or accountability and cutting taxes for wealthy people. We tried that during the 2000s, and it failed.
One of the things, a conversation I had yesterday on the air was with a economic thinker, who you both may agree or disagree with. His name is David Corton. And one of the things he posited on this program was that, we're talking about bailouts, he said that the Federal Reserve bailed out Wall Street and without any kind of oversight or regulations for close to $13 trillion since, in a report that was released in late last year by the Federal Reserve, $13 trillion. Not a similar kind of thing going to Americans, even though the money was trillions were devoted to other programs. They're over a long period of 5 to 10 years. This is like over a few months. And his argument is that this whole deficit argument is the wrong argument, that we have phantom wealth and real wealth in America. And one of the things he said that should be done is you have to harness and change the way the Federal Reserve uses its money. And force the creation to the Federal Reserve's money creation powers to finance investment in public goods rather than fueling the financial bubbles of Wall Street, which is his argument yesterday, and that to instead do as they do in North Dakota, which is fueled into helping create state banks and helping to create smaller state private banks around the country that are tied to the community, that develop a community. And develop jobs, and don't just put the money into Wall Street. Now, that's a plan that I think that has elements to me of left and right, conservative and liberal, progressive and libertarian in some senses. And I'm curious what you think of that. I mean, he's arguing that we are arguing the wrong thing here, Bob Cremer, that there's another way to think about how we should approach the issue of money in America.
Well, I think it's very interesting. I will say this. I mean, one thing we may agree on is I think the idea of bailing out those banks, those big banks, without forcing them to be broken up, without forcing the owners to divest themselves of their interests by allowing those guys to continue to take bonuses, was outrageous. And the Wall Street Accountability Bill that was passed last year, I think, will improve the situation going forward. I should note that the Republicans in the Congress opposed it. But that will make some progress going forward in terms of controlling Wall Street. But I'm a believer that the power of the Wall Street banks is one of our biggest problems. There is no economic reason to have such huge economic institutions. These are international institutions. They're not American banks. They're international banks. And I say banks, financial institutions. We can't allow them to simply have a huge casino there, and then with the view that if they all lose, then we end up, the taxpayers end up picking up the tab. That's what happened last time.
And before we have to round this out, one more quick question. I'd like you to comment on that too, Charles, and I'll let you both go.
Well, I agree with Bob. I think it's a good place to for this intermission, because I think we shouldn't have bailed him out. I was of the utmost disappointed with President Bush, who came up with the idea of bailing him out, and it must be noted that that's actually when the Tea Party rally started, during the Bush administration, toward the end of his administration, when he came up with this ridiculous idea of bailing out Wall Street. I had hoped that President Obama would come in and stop that. Instead, he passed a second stimulus to bail him out even further. We have to let the market penalize businesses and companies that make stupid financial decisions, and instead we reward them by giving them low-interest loans and give them time to pay back America's money without asking the taxpayer if we wanted to bail these companies out and Wall Street out to begin with. I do agree with the gentleman that the debate of phantom dollars versus real dollars has got to be one we have to have, and focus on what these real dollars are and change the mission of the Federal Reserve altogether. I wouldn't mind deregulating the Federal Reserve. I don't see it as a place, or should have a place in federal government and free markets. But so in that regard, I agree, and I do agree with Bob that we should have never allowed for taxpayers' dollars to bail out Wall Street.
No, I think you both probably.
Well, let me be clear. I'm not arguing there shouldn't have been a stabilization of the market. I'm just arguing that there should have been a price to pay for the to eliminate this horrific moral hazard that occurred when the owners of those banks ended up making off just fine in the end, and all those speculators and the bonus guys. I think it's there's a major role to stabilize financial markets. Otherwise, you'd have a financial collapse. I also, by the way, the stimulus was not a bailout. The stimulus was money being spent in the economy to generate demand so that people would actually create jobs. And I think there's no doubt that without the stimulus bill that was passed by by the Obama administration, there would have been another Great Depression.
I disagree.
And one final thing from just very quick. So both of you think that this week we'll see Democrats, the Congress, coming together with a plan, but I sense that one or the other, or both of you, think that plan may raise the debt ceiling, but it's not going to answer our long-term questions. Do you both agree or disagree with that very quickly, Charles and Bob, and then we'll roll?
I agree. Yeah, I agree that the debt ceiling will be raised, but I believe it will be raised dollar for dollar, expenses that will be cut so that we can show, as the leaders of this nation, that we are not morally bankrupt, that we do understand the importance of a balanced budget, and we have to take our consequences in order to ensure that what we do in terms of raising the debt ceiling, at the same time, we're lowering what we spend.
Bob Cramer? Cramer?
I hope the debt ceiling will be raised so we avoid a man-made default, and time will tell here in the next week.
Bob Cramer is partner at Democracy Partners. His book, most recently, is Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. Charles Lawler is Maryland State Director of Americans for Prosperity, and Bob and Charles have been a really lively and interesting discussion. I invite you both to come back, and thank you both so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
It's been my pleasure. I look forward to coming back.
Thank you. Thank Bob and Charles. Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com.